Good afternoon. I'm going to try to move today towards a definition of what is tznius and what is pritzus. And even though there are many, many places where the term tznius is used by Chazal, where the term pritzus is used by Chazal, but maybe we can at least begin by looking at the local sugya in Ksubo, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph and Daf Gimel Amud Beis, and see what emerges from there, and hopefully that can serve as a basis for the coalescing of a broader sugya and a broader definition. So there are two places on Daf Gimel and Ksubos where the term tznius and pritzus come up, and we'll get to them in just a moment, but B'derech HaTama, the Gemara Nida on Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, says that there's a certain thing which is the Idon Shel Tznuos. It's the time when Tznuos would perform bedikos to make sure that they weren't violating the Isser Nida. And that seems to be a bedika that's required by law. It's not something which is extracurricular, it's a requirement. And the Gemara's Havamina is that it's not mutually exclusive to say that something which is required is nonetheless defined as a hanhaga, a practice that's adapted by the tznuos, because perhaps all that defines a tznua is a person who adheres to the halachos of tznuos, however broadly or narrowly one defines that category. But then the Gemara rejects that. The Gemara says that would imply that if a person violates the halacha, so they merely forfeit this superlative of being a tznua. It would imply that a person who violates halacha is not a rasha, and that is absolutely false. A person who violates halacha is a rasha. So a person who keeps the halacha shouldn't be defined with this superlative that they're a tznua, but a person who keeps halacha is a person who keeps halacha, and a tznua then presumably is someone who goes beyond the letter of the law. Back to the Gemara Nida. And there's a major controversy in the Rishonim in Ksubos about whether to adapt the definition of the Gemara Nida, namely that a tznua is someone who goes beyond the letter of the law, a prutza slash rasha is someone who violates the law, and a person who simply keeps the law is neither a tznua nor a prutza. Or perhaps we should say that the Gemara in Ksubos is at odds with the Gemara Nida. I don't know if there's a machlokes or whether there is more than one passable definition of tznius and pritzus that can be used in different places, and that the Gemara in Ksubos would be saying either that tznuos are like the havamina in Nida, people who just keep the law, and pritzus are people who violate the law, or perhaps pritzus are people who keep the law, but just, and tznuos are people who go beyond the letter of the law. So those are the three possibilities, either the tznuos keep the law, the prutzos keep the law, or neither of them keep the law, the prutzos are really bad, and the tznuos excel. So, if you look here, the first source is Tosfos on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, at the tap, and Tosfos says, L'hachi kari luhu tznuos, they're called tznuos shemachmirim al atzman, afal gavne matzilin suvei. They're machmir on themselves, they're allowed to get married, menastam, they receive the get, and there's no reason to assume that the get is batel. They're worried that maybe their husband was ne'enas and fulfilling his tenai, and therefore the get is batel, and therefore they don't get married. In a din, they can rely on a rov, they're choshesh for a miyot. So that's really conduct above and beyond what halacha demands of them, that's why they're called tznuos. What about the prutzos? Why are the prutzos called prutzos? So here, I'm skipping to the second underline. Tosfos say, afilu kishateda hi atzma, the onis, even when she herself knows that her husband was nenas, in other words, that he did not fulfill his condition, or fulfilled his condition, whichever it was, because of circumstances beyond his control, she knows that the get is batel, because such a would invalidate the get. But achirim lo yadu, other people don't know, and she is happy to go ahead and get remarried and just keep her secret a secret from everybody. So it's clear that she knows 100% that she's not allowed to get remarried, she's going and getting remarried. So the prutza is someone who violates the law, the tznua is someone who goes beyond the letter of the law, and a person who just keeps the law is neither a prutza nor a tznua. However, Tosfos does have a second interpretation. He says, afilu kishiyitzi hakol da'anis, even if there's rumors that the get was batel, but the rumors are all unsubstantiated, amra de'lo'anis, so she'll dismiss the rumors as unsubstantiated and she'll get remarried. So it's not really clear what Tosfos holds the halacha should be in this case. Does Tosfos hold that unsubstantiated rumors are enough to make it that the law says a woman can't get remarried? Or does Tosfos hold that unsubstantiated rumors are insufficient, that she's really allowed to get remarried? So if Tosfos thinks that she's really not allowed to get remarried, if she knows that that the get is batel, she can't get remarried, if there's rumors that the get is batel, she can't get remarried, so then Tosfos' two answers are consistent. He's saying that the prutza consistently remains a person who violates halacha. However, if the first answer of Tosfos holds that rumors are insufficient, why does she have to worry about rumors? So then Tosfos is acknowledging that a person who actually keeps the law says that she's allowed to get remarried, she says that she doesn't have to worry about the rumors, and she doesn't worry about the rumors, she's getting remarried, she's keeping the law doesn't block her. Nonetheless, she is still labeled a prutza. Seems to be slightly against the Gemara. I want to skip down to the fourth paragraph here. So the Ritva has the following language. It says, HaRitva Zal Kasav, this is from the Shita Mekubetzes, Mishum Tznuos Mishum Prutzos, Klomar, Da'avid Rabbanon Takanta, De'lo Li'agnu Tznuos Shelo Kedin, De'lo Li'kalkalan Prutzos, the Prutzos shouldn't get messed up. Here, an important term, Kishe Ya'amdu Al Kav Hadin. And they stand at the line, the Rubicon, of the law. So the prutzos are standing on the kav hadin. So lo nuchal limchos biyadam, we can't protest, we can't stop them, because technically they're acting within the halacha, technically they're observing halacha. So that's who the Ritva defines the prutzos. They're people who are technically, they're observing the letter of the law, but just observing it. So that would seem for sure to go against the lashon of Tosfos that they're violating the law. Sounds like a person can be keeping the law and still be considered a prutza. So I think that might be explained in one of two ways. And either we'll say that prutzos is a state of mind rather than a code of conduct. Perhaps the state of mind will sometimes be unchecked, in which case it will explode into conduct. But it could be that a person has iron discipline, and therefore they're a prutza at heart, even though in conduct they are in full, even though in conduct they are in full compliance with the halacha. That might be what the Ritva is saying, that it's justifiable to call these people prutzos, even though they're in line with the letter of the law, because prutzos is a mindset. And in this particular case, they exercise discipline, but that doesn't stop them from being prutzos. They were really had the mindset of tznius, and they would have gone beyond the letter of the law. Alternately, I think that one could understand the Ritva a little bit differently. There are two types of law. There is what I would call law which is chatuch, it's cut and dried, and you could find that type of law in Shulchan Aruch. Every siman has its place, and then you have the law which is more amorphous. It's more, I don't want to call it fluid, but it's less well defined. And an example of that law is the law is a mitzvah of kedoshim tiyu. Kedoshim tiyu demands different things of different people. There are some people in some circumstances who it demands more of, other people in other circumstances of whom it demands less. The basic rule is that every person has to make harchakos, for themselves, and they have to act in accordance with the level of kedusha which they're capable of acting with. person who's capable of acting with more Kedusha, so the mitzvah demands more of them. A person who's not capable of acting with as much Kedusha, the mitzvah demands less of them. Now, if a person, let's take a woman, yes.
So for the cut and dry, that's basically a universal standard, is what you're saying. Mashain Cain, other kinds of laws where there's not a universal standard necessarily. The standard is to do as much as expected of you in that particular case. But that's as much as the standard is. It's just that, okay. Right.
So, if you take the prutzos, we'll say, maybe a prutza is a woman who is violating kedoshim to you. She's violating kedoshim to you because she's technically capable of reaching a higher level of kedusha, a higher level of whatever it is, prishos, or not being a novel, birshos haTorah, whatever the gather is, they're capable of reaching a higher level, and they neglect to do so. So they're being mevatel the mitzvah, as I say, of kedoshim to you for a person of their level, and therefore they're an avarion. So based on the Gemara Nida, we certainly are justified in calling them a prutza. But at the same time, I can't point to a chapter and verse in the Shulchan Aruch that they're violating, because they're not violating a chapter or a verse in the Shulchan Aruch. What they're violating is a mitzvah of kedoshim to you as it applies to someone on their level. And in contrast, the tsnua will be a person for whom kedoshim tiyu only demands a certain amount, and she goes even beyond that. She's trying to constantly push the boundaries of her refinement further and further, and so therefore she's constantly trying to grow her obligation and her observance of kedoshim tiyu, and by dint of that, she would be called a tsnua. So that's another way where you might have a situation of a person who lo nuchal limchos biyadam. We're not able to protest, we're not able to say you're violating a law, because you can't point and say you're violating this law, you're violating that law. How are you going to prove to a person that kedoshim tiyu is mechayiv them to act with this particular level of kedusha? It's impossible to prove. A person could just say kimli ba'atzmi, that is not so. But at the same time, that it still may be that the person is a prutza because they're actually being mevatel the mitzvah of kedoshim tiyu. There's a similar lashon elsewhere in the Shita Mekubetzes. He brings it down from the Ra'ah that a woman has an obligation to investigate to a certain extent to see whether the get that she received is kosher, whether the get that she received is not kosher, depending on assuming that there's something unclear about the circumstances of the get's receipt. And says the Ra'ah that the prutzos are the women who don't investigate as much as they should. And the tznuos are the women who investigate more than they should, and they abstain from remarrying until they conclude their investigations. How is a person supposed to know? There's no protocol. It's not written anywhere in Shulchan Aruch exactly how much she's supposed to investigate, how much money she's supposed to spend on private detectives, and how much independent analysis and second opinions and everything else. It doesn't say that anywhere. So she could be that this woman is expected to do more. She does less. And that's what makes her be called a prutza, even though she's not violating any din chatuch in the Shulchan Aruch. Another thing that we have to look into in the sugya of tznius and pritzos is the question of intention. How much is tznius a function of a person's conduct? And again, how much is tznius a function of a person's cognitions? So there's an interesting shakla vitaria also within the ritva here, and that goes as follows. We're now in the fifth paragraph. The Ritva points out that there's two different girsos in the Gemara. The Gemara says that it could be that the tznuos are the ones who are sovros that the get is batel, and the tznuos might be better described as ones who are omros that the get is batel. Sovros versus omros. So what's the difference between the two of them? So the Ritva assumes that sovros means that they are convinced of it. It's not just minasafa vilachutz, it's not just with their mouth, but it's in their mind. It's in their mind that their husband was nenas. They have it in their head. They're imagining vividly that their husband was nenas, and that therefore the get is batel. So, if so, says the Ritva, if that's the Girsa in the Gemara, that they're sovros, they mamish, believe it, then why are they called tznuos? So the question is a strange question. What do you mean, why are they called tznuos? They're called tznuos because they're abstaining from getting remarried out of concern for the fact that the get is batel. So obviously the Ritva is assuming that that's not enough. That's not enough. He's assuming that in order for a person to be a tznua, she has to perceive herself as going beyond the letter of the law. And that therefore this woman, who's convinced that the get is batel, who's convinced that all she's doing is following the law to its letter and no more, can't be a tznua. If she's sovros, if she really believes that the get is batel, and she really believes that all she's doing is following the letter of the law, so then she's not a tznua. A tznua can't be just a person who goes beyond the letter of the law. It must be a person who consciously decides, I want to go beyond the letter of the law. If a person is mistaken about what the letter of the law is, so that would not classify them as a tznua. However, the Ritva's answer is, he overturns the Hava Amina. He says, Kishaliba nokfa, when her heart is beating within her, v'choseshes shehu anos, and she's worried that he's anos, tznius gedola hayala. It's a tremendous tznius. It's a thing that can mean one of two things. It might mean that, in the end of the day, it's not her perception, her self-perception, as being lefnim mishuras hadin, but rather it's her conduct. If her conduct is lefnim mishuras hadin, it makes no difference whether the conduct was undertaken in error or whether it was undertaken with full knowledge of the facts. The fact is that she is acting in a manner which the law does not require of her. It's a manner which is extraordinarily refined, and therefore she's a tznua. Alternately, though, the Ritva might be saying, and I think that the language of the Ritva seems to support this more, kishaliba nokva. It's the very fact that she has this vivid imagination of the get is batel. That itself is tznius. A woman who allows herself to be convinced, I mean, it's a strange phenomenon. There may be, if we were to apply it, let's say, to the more colloquial types of tznius. So are we going to say that a woman who believes that she has to walk around in a redid or whatever other these things, she believes that that's what the law demands of her. So the Ritva will say, okay, so it's a tznius to be able to come up with such an elaborate misconception of what the law demands of you. The Ritva will say, that's a tznius. But there may be other difficulties with the distortion of the demands of the law, but the Ritva would say that doesn't stop it from being a regesh shel tznius. One last ta'ara. That is a question of motive. Not a question of self-perception, but a question of motive. So you find in Rishonim, I think that the default assumption is that if a person is a tznua, so she's a tznua because of an innate sense of modesty. But some Rishonim seem to, I'm not sure if they're going out of their way to do it, but they seem to define the motive of these women whom we describe as tznuos as being something other than an innate feeling that they should be modest. And we find this in three different places. The first one here is in the second paragraph. I forget who the Shita Mekubetzis is quoting from, but he says that the reason that the tznuos are machmiros al atzman, the reason that they are abstaining from getting remarried, is mipnei shein choshishos shemayiyu b'neihem mamzerim. They're worried because if they get remarried and they're in error, then their children will be mamzerim. So in order to spare the children from the second marriage, they just won't get married a second time at all. So it seems that the tznius here is not motivated by an innate sense of modesty. It's motivated by a yiras ha'onesh. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it's called tznius. Tznius doesn't have to be motivated by this innate sense of modesty. It's called tznius even if a person's worried that the tznius grade on their report card is not going to not going to be the best, not going to make their parents proud, whatever it is. It's still called tznius. tznias shelo lishma. And it's interesting because the Shita Mekubetzes goes on and says the prutzos, so they're acting within the letter of the law. We saw an opinion like that before, but because lo chayshu lemamzeiros b'neim kvinan lu prutzos, they're not worried about this consequence, and because of that, they're called the prutzos. Again, this idea that a person might be acting within the letter of the law, right? But if they're not going to let their report card grade, I don't know, I guess at the schools will give you a lower grade even if you're fulfilling all of the halachos, just so long as, because if you're not up to the school standards, so they don't let that deter them from being motivated to adapt a higher standard of conduct. So that already is considered to be a certain level, a certain amount of pritzos. Right, you have that also, the second to last paragraph, all the way at the end. Again, the same idea. Afal gav de kedin menasvin. Even though these pritzos are following the law, the law permits them to get remarried. Kari lu pritzos. They're called pritzos lafuke tznuos because they're not tznuos. Person who's not at snuo doesn't go above and beyond the letter of the law, it's legitimate to call them a prutza, even though they're acting within the letter of the law, even though aval prutzos lav dafka, it doesn't mean like literally prutzos, but figuratively prutzos, not dafka, but still the word could be applied. However, we do find later on daf gimel amud beis that that there is something a little bit less when tznios is coming from impure motivations. The Gemara says that the prutzos would be moser nefesh. They would give up their life rather than have bia with the hegemon, a time when the Greeks or the Romans or whoever it was made a gzera that whoever got married had to be nevelas lehegemon tchila, and the tznios would be moser nefesh. So Rashi already says that the tznios would be moser nefesh. Why? Because they were so distraught over the concern that they would be forbidden to their husbands, that they would be moser nefesh rather than come back on what was supposed to be their wedding night and not be allowed to be with their husbands. So they would like a romantic suicide. That's basically, and that's according to Rashi, that is tznios. This type of a romantic suicide is nonetheless defined called tznios because in the end of the day, they're committing suicide to avoid the bia of the hegemon. So, at first glance, it seems that it doesn't take away from the shame tznius. The Ritva adds on, yes?
Rashi's not saying that they would be afraid of nichshol with their husbands, meaning that they would assume... I haven't seen Rashi in the sense of summer, but that's what I came with. But it could be totally reading into Rashi.
You have to consider it. The Ritva adds on. Tovsos hadavar bifgam. Not 100% sure what that means. Tovsos hadavar bifgam. I assume it means that there is something that would lower their status, that would make them feel worse about themselves. Pagum, like a cup that somebody drank from already. So that's not a geshmaka thing. So they would give up their life. What's behind them? They don't want to be pigumais. But nonetheless, that's considered to be tznios. But the Ritva adds on, that because this is their only motive, that's why we're happy to tell them that they shouldn't risk their lives. If they were motivated more sincerely by the desire for Kiddush Hashem, then perhaps we would stay silent. We wouldn't tell them, don't risk your life, you don't have to risk your life, you're permitted. If they were motivated by Kiddush Hashem, so then we would say, oh, you want to be Mekadeshim Shemayim, go ahead, we're not going to tell you not to. It's only because the motives here are somewhat insincere that that we are telling them, look, you don't have to take things this far. So there you have an example. Again, it's not a perfect contrast because over here the tznius is incomplete, but it's Kiddush Hashem that we're really focusing on, not the lack of tznius. But one way or another, it seems that a tznius shelo lishma here is treated at a lower level than a tznius l'shem shemayim, l'shem kiddush Hashem.
Compensating
points.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You can still make more. He's married at
5:31. Maybe 5:30
on Sundays? It's very late. And it's only 5:31 now.
Well, so are you speaking on Yasser?
Right. Yeah, I'll take care of it here if you want to go to Mara.
Yeah, I'll take care of it.
Yeah,
it's much too early.
I'll take care of it when he does, but like...
Okay, it's not wise.
Yeah.
Oh, I've still seen